Good morning, and welcome to the Local Foods, Local Places radio show discussing the local foods movement in the San Luis Valley. This show airs on KRZA Community Radio every third Thursday of the month at 8:30 a.m. And you can also listen to any of our shows at any time on our website, www.slvlocalfoods.org/radio show. Today, I have with me Kari Konari, artist, farmer, business owner, and Moki chef. Welcome to the show, Kari.
Thanks, Abe.
To start off the show, would you please tell us a little bit about who you are and what led you to coming to the San Luis Valley, and of course, the work that you're currently doing here?
Well, I came to the valley because I purchased land in order to build a house and a homestead. I had been already raising pigeons, even though I lived in the city. I had already been into the homesteading movement. So yeah, it'd been about 3 years already, 4 years that I'd been raising pigeons. So I really wanted to find land because I was experiencing a lot of problems in the city, having my birds with trying to build a bird coop, having to relocate them frequently and retrain them. So I just really wanted to build that home for them. And then also I had a lot of perennial herbs that I lost out on because I had to relocate being a renter. And the valley was a great option because I was able to find cheap land. I really am attracted to the desert, and I really like open spaces. So for me, the valley was the place to go, and I fell in love with my land immediately, even though it was December, snowy, and it looked desolate. I was like, I love it. And I did end up building a house, and my land partner also built a house. And since then, I have sold that property actually to a young motocrosser who I think is perfect for the land because it has 5 acres and he could do something cool with motocross. And so I purchased new land, which is in Alamosa County. I felt a stronger connection to Alamosa than I did Blanca, not Mount Blanca, but Blanca, the city. I really found a community in Alamosa. I really fell in love with Alamosa. So I made an effort to find land here. Yeah. And I only have an acre now. So we kind of downsized, but the property already had a septic and electricity and a barn, well, a garage studio. So it made it a lot easier to start a homestead. Because as you know, or as any homesteader knows, like starting with nothing is really, really difficult. And there's a lot of legality that you have to deal with. And so I was lucky to find a property that I got a little jump start on all that. And now I have an art studio. Me and my two land partners, I'm lucky to go in with two people because as you know too, like doing everything by yourself is very hard. So I'm lucky to have, you know, collaborators in this. And we've remodeled the garage into this amazing art studio. And we have a wood stove for heat, but we do have on-grid electricity. We do have some solar power, like for backup, and I'd like to do more solar power and alternative energy in the future. It's hard when you're using power tools, unfortunately. Although when we were in the desert, we built all of our houses on one solar panel, and we lived off of just one battery. So.
Oh yeah, I can feel you on that. I remember times when we would be working until the battery died, and then we knew that that was our time to take a break, and we'd time it out exactly 45 minutes while the battery was charging off the solar panels.
Yeah, that's the way to do it, especially when your saws, you know, I think you know, having that just one tiny little Ryobi circular saw, I built my entire house, you know, just one little Ryobi battery. And but you use what you got, you know, and it was it felt really good to, like, you know, really know what it's like living off the grid and using and not having so much stimulation. You know, I moved out to the desert to be, you know, away from people, electricity and television. So I was happy to not have that. I really enjoyed that time of solitude and open space. And so
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
I'd love to just dive a little bit deeper about your artwork really mm-hmm. quick, if you're all right with that.
Yeah.
I understand. I mean, I know that you have done the logo for the mobile kitchen, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
But from what I know, you also are a ceramicist, like multimedia artist. So what's some of your history and artistic background?
So really, I'm an artist more than anything. I'm actually a painter. All of farming and cooking, this is all new in the past like 5 years, I would say. But I've been painting my whole life. And I went to college for painting, and I always wanted to be an artist, but I had that social pressure from the world, you know, you're not going to make money and all this. And I believed them. And so I was always trying to, you know, oh, I'll be an immigration lawyer, or I'll do this or that. And then when reality came to it, I graduated and I was like, I still want to be an artist. I was a professional artist, but I also had other jobs. I modeled for artists. That was one way I made money. And I had a gallery downtown Denver in the house I was renting that I was also like having my birds and homestead. I had other artists, and I was able to paint and exhibit art, because as you know, a lot of times you make art and then you put it in a closet. And I think that was like, you know, just that need to share my art partially. But then I kind of got worn out from trying to do shows and trying to sell my art. But yeah, as far as like my actual art goes, I do scratch board, ceramics, mostly at the rec center right now, although I am setting up my own studio. And I'm getting better at the wheel. Mostly I do hand building sculpture. I really like things out of my imagination. I don't really use reference images, although I am inspired by images, and I'm constantly absorbing, you know, new artists. I'm constantly looking at what other people are creating. I'm constantly being inspired by past art. I love looking at ancient art and studying other cultures' art. I love spiritual art, especially like, you know, international. Latin America is a huge, Mexico is a huge inspiration for me. You know, I love color, vibrancy, and the human form is another inspiration for me. But really, I just kind of, my ideal painting situation is just like be able to just see what comes out. And sometimes it's surreal, sometimes abstract. Sometimes I'll intentionally be like, I want this message to be portrayed, or this emotion. But sometimes no, you know, I just love to paint or draw. It's therapeutic.
And that kind of your artistic, you know, everything that you've been talking about being an artist really translates a lot into your business, right? Your other mm-hmm. business of what is the name of that? The construction and everything that you do?
Infinite Chroma. So that's my I do decorative painting. I also do just straight house painting, interior and exterior house painting. I also do creative tile work. And I've also done plastering, earthen plastering, and regular plastering, drywall plastering. So, and I've had a lot of creative jobs in the Valley and a lot of awesome clients that I've gotten the opportunity to work with and made some amazing projects, you know, manifest. Like I did a 1,000-square-foot mural in Crestone in like a lazur. It's like thin layers of different colored glazes on top of each other. And that was an amazing job. And a pebble mosaic. And so gotten a lot of ways to put my art into the construction world, which can be difficult. You know, to be creative in the construction world, it takes longer to be creative sometimes, and people want things fast now, done quick, easy, cheap. So I've tried to work my way into that world and try to be fast and cheap, but then also be creative. So
that's awesome. And what is the best way for people to learn more about you?
So my website for Infinite Chroma, my decorative painting and tile business is infinitechroma.com, which is infinite, and then chroma is spelled like the crow, C-R-O-W, and then M-A, like ma. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, so they can Google Infinite Chroma. I'm also on Instagram under Infinite Chroma, and I'm always updating projects that I work on. You can also call me, email me through my website. So all my information's on there.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk some more about the mobile kitchen, or the Moki. I've been a Moki chef for some time, but for those of you who don't know anything about it, would you mind just explaining in your own words what the Moki does and why you have chosen to be one of the Moki coordinators?
Well, the intention of the Moki is to really get people inspired by local food and also give them ideas on different ways to cook local food, and also to support local farmers and to try to feature local farmers to help give them a little PR, and also like, okay, well, I've never cooked with goat meat, you know? So I think it's also maybe to introduce people to things that they didn't know they liked, or also to remind people of what they do like and they forgot, you know? A lot of people love beets, they just forget. So just reminding people what we do have here locally, because since we have the luxury of a grocery store, a lot of times we forget about local food and we're eating coconuts and blueberries, which is great. Nothing against that. But we also have a lot of local food and a lot of things you can do with it.
Yeah. And like you said, like supporting the farmer, it all brings in the local economy into it, I think.
And letting people also understand like a direct relationship with a farmer and how rewarding that can be. I know coming from the city, I started to really understand how food is created, because when you're in the city, you just go to the grocery store and you don't drive by cows like we do here, and you don't really feel any connection with farmers or how food's grown. And I feel like the more connection you have with farming or growing your own food, for instance, the more satisfying it is, really. Like, I love being like, oh, you know, I remember where these beets were grown, and I know the farmer who raised this cow. And I think it also helps with like accountability. You know, a lot of commercial farming and large scale farming, there's really not a lot of accountability. You can't really trust. It's hard for me to trust that large scale or on a small scale. I really trust because I see the way the farmers are and how they treat their animals and how they grow their vegetables, and I have a lot of respect for them. So,
Essentially what you do is you come up with a recipe,
right?
And give out free recipe cards to the public at the farmers markets. That inspires them to eat local food.
Exactly.
So what's one of your favorite recipes that you've made?
The most recent one I've done was the Elena's lamb stew with potatoes and onions, with a side of quinoa, some baked apples. And I've done a lot of Latin-inspired, Mexican-inspired foods, since we have a lot of foods that you can make salsa from around here. I've done like an apple jalapeno salsa. I know apples aren't San Luis Valley local, but there's a lot of apples in Colorado, so I'm counting them. And I really enjoyed that delicata curry dish that you made. That was amazing. My plan for next week is to do an egg drop soup with some yak broth and some duck eggs from Megan's farm. And Larry has some amazing microgreens. So like, for instance, with my microgreens, there's a lot of people that aren't really familiar with that, since it's not in the common food language in the valley. So, you know, I'm really glad Larry's out there promoting microgreens. It can go with almost every dish. You know, I was going to sprinkle them on top of the egg drop soup, put them on top of the steamed vegetables and the quinoa, and they're just really nutritious. And a lot of times it's not that people don't want it. They just aren't aware. They're not used to it. So it's like kind of introducing people to these, to this new way of eating that is, you know, local, right, you know, right in their neighborhood, people that are growing. So, yeah.
And so right now, normally the Moki's at the Alamosa Farmers Market or the Monta Vista Farmers Market, but this year we're trying something new, and that's the Winter Farmers Market at North River Greenhouse. This market's been going on since January 9th, and it will continue every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. through February 29th. Can you describe what it's like going to the Winter Farmers Market?
Yeah, it's like summer in February, really. And the actual location is just fabulous. It's a large greenhouse, and you walk around. There's art vendors as well as food vendors. Gosar sausage is the other fresh, or I should say ready-made food. Larry has sprouts. There's a new woman had like spirit horses for some art. Elena has some local lamb's wool products, like hand-dyed yarns. She has some meat, local meat, lamb meat, and in all different kinds of cuts that you could imagine. Megan has duck eggs. I don't know if she has quail eggs right now. Sometimes she has quail eggs. So it's a great experience, you know, especially in the winter when you don't get a lot of that feeling like you're outdoors. Even though it's indoors, it really has an outdoor feeling to it. And it's really free-flowing, people walking around. And so, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. And then you're going to be preparing food there this coming week, and you were there last week. So what are some of the things that you like to prepare? What do you think people will expect if they make it to this upcoming Winter Farmers Market?
Well, I'll be making the egg drop soup that I was telling you about. I'm also going to be making steamed vegetables, beets, carrots, and some other root veggies, kind of Asian inspired with the local produce. And I'll also have some black quinoa. If you all have never tried black quinoa, it's really good. Because we do have a quinoa processing facility in the valley, which is really amazing. How they process quinoa is pretty, it has like this high technology laser to try to discern between like dirt and the quinoa. And so it's really amazing that we have that here in the valley. And quinoa is one thing I try to really promote because it's one grain, or I guess it's a seed that we can grow here since we can't grow rice. But obviously we can also grow beans. We have a lot of bean dishes. We've done a lot of like good chilies with homemade tortillas. And I use a lot of herbs since I grow herbs. I have, you know, I use a lot of rosemary and oregano and mint. We've done like watermelon mint salads a lot. And
speaking of the herb side of things and the mint, and I would just love to hear more about the tea that you do, because as a Moki coordinator and your incredible understanding of tea and the various teas that you've donated to the Moki, I was wondering if you could, you know, share a little bit about your passion with tea, and how that has kind of connected your work from the art world to the tea house and the farming and, of course, the mobile kitchen.
Yeah, so I've been growing herbs for about 10 years. I started in the city because herbs is something that you can do on a small scale, which is why I love it. I love micro farming because it's something that's feasible for me that I feel like I can do. And I've learned a lot over the years of herbs that are easier to grow in this climate. Calendula, for instance, is very drought resistant, so I grow a lot of calendula. Chamomile, German chamomile does really well here. Mint, there's all different kinds of mints that do good here. I have not had success with lavender. There's some herbs that don't do well here as well, so that's part of the process of learning farming and how fast things grow and harvesting, you know, what time to harvest the herbs. And I also harvest a lot of my own seeds, so I can have our heirloom seeds and use them the next year. I do that with my basils and my calendula. Oh my gosh, I have so many calendula seeds. So I guess when I say tea, technically it's herbal tea, tisane. I do not grow green tea or black tea, but I use, in some of my blends, I'll use black tea and green tea blended with some of my herbs, so that kind of complement whatever the blend might be, a stimulating blend or a calming blend that you might want to take in the evenings. I really enjoy the medicinal value of herbs. Red clover is a good one to know. Yarrow grows wild along the rivers and also in the farm ditches. Pennyroyal grows in the farm ditches, also known as poleo in Spanish. Sage, obviously sage, grows really well here. We don't have a lot of like the wild silver sage like they do in Taos. We have more of the rabbit brush, even though they call them chamisa, which means sage in Spanish. We don't actually have a lot of like culinary sage, for instance, that grows wild here. So you do have to make an effort, but it will come back. You know, it is a perennial. So anise hyssop grows really well here, which I just discovered last year. So I'm always discovering, that's what I love about herbalism, is there's a lot of diversity. I'm always like learning new herbs and kind of experimenting with different flavors and yeah.
Right on. And now I'd love to hear a little bit about your involvement at the farm park, the Rio Grande Farm Park. As we know, in our modern times, young farmers are becoming more scarce, and it's a concern not just for the USDA and the agriculture industry, but also for our communities, as family farms are frequently bought out by larger corporations. Mm-hmm. So I was just wondering if you could share what inspires you to be a young farmer and what are some of the challenges that you have overcome on this journey.
So yeah, I think what inspired me was my love for plants, for one thing. You know, I really feel a genuine connection with plants, and I love watching them grow. I love being a part. I love that mutual relationship that I feel like we have. And as far as being a farmer, you know, it is really challenging because you only have two hands, you know, and with big industry, you know, there's tractors and huge sprinkler systems and giant circles with hundreds of acres. And I think it can be really disheartening, like, wow, I can't compete with that. But I think the more I do it, the more I love having that diversity. You know, I probably am the most diverse farmer that I know, not the most successful farmer, don't get that confused, but I grow a lot of different things. And for me, you know, that's success for me, because I'm learning, and partially what I grow is medicine, you know, so I'm really passionate about that. I've personally seen my own healing, and a lot of the food out there causes a lot of inflammation and a lot of diseases that we're experiencing in this society are because of the food, you know. So I really hope that young people don't get too overwhelmed and know that you can be small and still do farming at a smaller scale.
So you're a farmer, you're an artist, you're a Moki chef. So you've been involved in this process kind of from start to finish. And so I wanted to ask you what it's like for you to be involved in the entire process of growing food, preparing it, and serving it.
I think it really not only benefits my health personally, it benefits my emotional health, and I just truly enjoy my food, and I plan I think it's important to, when I'm planning a meal, I think about what's in season, what I'm growing. It makes you more conscious of the weather. It makes you more connected with the local farmers. I'm like, oh, what does that farmer have right now? What kind of cheese is Nitschka making that could go with this person's food? So I think it really has helped me connect with the valley, the people, and kind of truly understand what I'm putting into my body in almost a more spiritual way. Because when you watch a bean or a flower or a root vegetable grow from start to finish, it's so satisfying and you can taste the difference. There's so much, you know, flavor packed in this small little package, you know. So I think it's really, really rewarding. And I really, you know, even if you're just a backyard gardener, you know, you are making a difference even by just going out and buying local food. Like, you're making a difference. And I think that's what's key, is like, focus on, you know, what you can do instead of what you can't do. Like, we can't change the world overnight. So, you know, those of you who do support local farmers and do come to the farmers market and just the whole community we have here, you know, we're all so grateful to be helping each other. So
that's awesome. Very inspiring. Thank you so much, Kari, for being here today and talking with us. To everyone, thanks for listening to the show. And if you'd like to speak more with Kari, you can come check out the Winter Farmers Market this Saturday from 10 to 1 p.m. at North River Greenhouse. Or you can look for
Infinite Chroma. Like infinite, like the universe is infinite. And then crow like the bird, and ma like what kids call their mom when they're a baby. Okay.
Totally. So check out Kari online. Come go to the Winter Farmers Market. And thanks for listening to the show today.
Yeah.
This is the Local Foods, Local Places radio show being broadcast on KRCA 88.7 FM Community Radio and available online for anytime listening at our website www.slvlocalfoods.org/radio show. This program is paid for by the San Luis Valley Local Foods Coalition, whose mission is to foster an equitable local food system that restores the health of the people, community, economy, and ecosystem. If you would like to comment on this show or would like to get involved, please call our office at 719-937-2319. Thanks for listening, and tune in next month to hear more about the local foods movement in the San Luis Valley.
On today's program was played by The Horseflies, featuring the song Cluck Old Hen.